Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. So glad you could be with us this evening ahead of the Thanksgiving Day holiday coming up next week. We will be off next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk. But we have a great show tonight. We're going to talk high school and college football, both past and present issues, with a very special guest. We're also going to have insights on this weekend's upcoming high school football playoff games and some highlights from last weekend's games. Plus, we're going to talk a little Redskins football and also some NCAA hoops with college basketball season already underway. We'll spend a few minutes on the hardwood. But first, everything starts with a man off to my right, the co-host of the program, the outstanding senior sports writer for The Morning Call, Mr.
It's about
Keith
time
Kroller.
You got that introduction exactly how I
You complained I on air last week that I didn't phrase you
referred
as the outstanding.
Now we're talking about very great show, very special guests.
We do have a very special guest, but you are the outstanding.
You don't say that about everybody that's on the show.
No. Well, this is very special. And you are an outstanding writer. And I've said that three times now, so I think are we okay?
We're good.
Okay, we're good for 5 minutes. All right, tonight's special guest, current Morning Call sports writer, former editor of The Morning Call, and so many great stories to talk about, the one and only Mr. Paul Reinhart. Paul, thank you so much for being here tonight.
The one and only. Even Keith never called me the one and only.
Well,
he never called me that.
At some point, I would like to ask you to talk about your writers on your staff when you were the editor, including Keith. So, but we'll tease that for now. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We opened that opening shot, my hair's a little sticking up there, but that's not a problem for Paul, obviously, but my hair's sticking up
in the back
a little bit.
I just got a haircut this afternoon.
You look sharp. Yeah. Where do you go, to Eskimos or Slam Barrett?
No, Master Cuts.
Okay.
Remember these comments that Keith is making when I'm asking you to rank all the Morning Call writers all time.
Oh, yeah, I know I'm not in that top five. I guarantee you that. Yeah. Maybe there's a list on the top, but it's not the top five of best writers. That's for sure.
All right. Well, Paul, I want to start first back a ways because as Keith, you know, when he came up with the idea to have you on the show, and you know he was talking about your history and you know your playing days and before you were even the editor of the Morning Call. So let's start. Where did you play football and talk about growing up?
Well, my playing days were slim and none. I spent most of the time on the bench. But I went to Allentown High School, played on the last unbeaten Allentown High School football team back in 1957, on which Keith Groller's father was a junior member of that team. Mm-hmm. I was a senior on that team. And that was the end of my football career. I played junior high school football and high school football. I was a center. And I was usually the center of the bench rather than the center of the offensive line. But that was a special year, really.
The reason I really wanted you to come on this show, besides the Lehigh-Lafayette game, or you would say the Lafayette-Lehigh game on Saturday, is to talk a little bit about that Thanksgiving stuff. Because my father always talks about it, and he, you know, sounds a little curmudgeonly when he says, oh, look, we used to play in front of 15, 16, 20,000 people. And those, especially on Thanksgiving, those were special games when Allentown played Bethlehem.
Well, yeah, that is. That's true. And he's very right. You couldn't go to a place on Thanksgiving Day that it wasn't really, I mean, packed. You know, Northampton, Catasauqua, Allentown, Bethlehem. Not when it was Allentown and Bethlehem. It wasn't Allen and Liberty. You know, it was Allentown and Bethlehem, and Easton Peaburg was always the same, and Wilson Nazareth and Penn-Ardrill Bangor, and it was great. You know, I mean,
Emmaus-Whitehall, right?
Emmaus-Whitehall, mm-hmm. The first game that I ever covered of Thanksgiving Day was Stroudsburg and East Stroudsburg, and I remember that it was a running back by the name of Harold Mach 2 Myers, you know, and I went from there the next year to Quakertown, Penn Ridge, you know, and I covered Quakertown, Penn Ridge for a couple of years, and then I graduated up to Caddy in Northampton, and that was a lot of fun doing those games because Northampton was so good. I mean, Caddy would get drilled every year, and every year on Thanksgiving Day, I would pick Catasauqua, and Al Erdacy would say to me, Catasauqua. And I told him, Coach, they're going to win one, and I'm going to be on it. You know, and they finally won one 7-6, and I had them. You know, I had them winning a game. But high school football on Thanksgiving Day was it. That was spectacular.
Well, you assigned me 1981. I come back from Penn State on break, and you assigned me. And I have a list. I still keep the list. It was you sent me down to Upper Perk Soderton, and then I graduated to Quakertown Penridge, and then did that for a couple of years. And then Allen, if you remember, Allen and Deere revived their rivalry, and I picked that up. But mostly, I'd say, other than that, I was part of the team when the big one, Easton Peabrick, won 100th a couple of years ago. And all that, we had the whole, almost like the whole staff was over at Easton Peabrick. But I've been mostly that guy now doing that caddy Northampton game. And I wonder how long it's going to go. I mean, this year you have a situation where Northampton's not going to, well, Northampton did play, get another game in there, but they're going to be off for like 3 weeks, and Catasauq was going to be off for a month with the way the thing is structured now.
Yeah, because of ending the season earlier this year.
It's beginning
the,
earlier and ending
all
earlier.
The classifications, That's a, I guess that'll be a real problem. I mean, we always had a couple of weeks off from the last game of the season until Thanksgiving Day. That was the way it, that was the way it was, but you know, it was great. I never saw an Allentown Allen Liberty game or anything. That was John Kunda territory.
As a reporter,
you know, for Thanksgiving Day, that was Kunda territory.
You probably did have some Allen and Deriff games though. Back when they played in the back, 60s.
Yeah, when they played in the mid-season games. I remember.
How about Thanksgiving? They, I mean, they had two different sets of Thanksgiving. I think they played in like the late 60s, early 70s. They took a break, and then they brought it back with your boy, Tony Fry. The late Tony Fry brought it back when he was in charge of the school district there, or at least the sports end of the school district.
There was one.
And they brought it back.
The one Allen Deriff game that I remember was a Jeep Bednarik game. When he onsides kicked at 60-6, I think it was 60-6, and he onsides kicked, and I think Kunda was covering the game, and I was doing a sidebar, and I wrote in the sidebar something about, you know, onsides kick at 60-6. Jeep didn't talk to me for 3 years, you know, that was it with him for a number of years, but he ended up being a friend, but that there was a very testy time there for a few years.
Well, there were so many neat traditions, and our friend Evan Burian had done a whole book on Thanksgiving Day rivalries. And one of the things that Evan always talked about was how much we played it up as a newspaper. We used to have pictures of the captains and special pictures. And when Allen and Deriff would play, we'd have everybody lined up, all the seniors in an A and the Deriff seniors in a D. And then we'd have that big prediction grid, which was kind of neat. All that stuff gone by the wayside. Of course, the Thanksgiving Day paper used to be the biggest paper
huge.
Of the year.
Yeah, it was
and
huge.
The sports section was, you used to call them, when you were the editor, when a story wouldn't fit any other day, say, well, it's an evergreen. We'll save it for Thanksgiving.
Save it for Thanksgiving week, you know. That's right, because you did stories on every game, not just capsules. You know, you did full blown stuff, and you went out and you knew the coaches. You went and you actually met the coaches. I mean, I knew Fred Ross from Stroudsburg and Ed Christian at
East Stroudsburg. That's another one that went by the wayside.
You know,
too,
those guys. Right. You know, you got to know those kind of people, and it was really a neat time.
Well, I got to say that beginning with 1981, I haven't missed one since in all those years. I don't know how many that would be, 36 years, I guess it would be this year. Mm-hmm. But it's always neat. There's something special about getting in the car and driving and getting to that stadium, whether it's not now for me, it's either Northampton or Caddy, and this year it'll be Caddy. And the atmosphere is so special. Everybody's kind of in a festive mood. Some people are coming out of the bars because now it's a big drinking night the night before. Everybody comes back, and if you're out of town, you come back for the Caddy Northampton game. I'm sure the Easton Peabrick do the same thing. And these people have a big party night on Wednesday night, and some of them stagger into the stadium. But it's really a neat atmosphere, and I would hate to see these last two, actually three if you count Quakertown Penridge. I'd hate to see these three games go. Certainly Easton Peabrick will not go anytime soon, but I'm worried about maybe some of the other ones.
Yeah, I agree. It went dwindle, you know. I mean, we would run the series,
scores,
a year-by-year scores on every series that there was, and there were, I don't know, there might have been 17, well, 18 of them, or, you know, something like that.
Evan would say that was his favorite sports section of the entire year when we ran that stuff.
Northampton Caddy would play at Muhlenberg College. You know, they didn't play at the high schools. They played at Muhlenberg College because neither of the stadiums had enough seating to take care of the people, and they'd get 10,000 people at Muhlenberg College, you know, ringing the field and all that kind of stuff. It was But you go to a game in the morning, and you go to another game in the afternoon, you know, and there were, it was a day.
A lot of people did doubleheaders. You're right. And I would guess, now look, if it's a nice day, if the weather could be important. We never know what we're going to get on Thanksgiving. A couple Thanksgivings ago, we had snow. Last time the Northampton Caddy Series was at Caddy, it snowed. Last year, you could almost put on the suntan lotion. It was so nice. You never know. So sunny and so warm up at Northampton. You never know what you're going to get on Thanksgiving.
No, you don't. No, you don't. And that's a good thing about Thanksgiving. I mean, my Thanksgiving Day game in my senior year against Bethlehem, you know, it was pouring rain. It was a 6-0 game. It was, like, brutal. You know, but, you know, it was a nothing game.
What I started to say was, even though it's a 3 wins between Caddy and Northampton, I bet it's going to be a well-attended game because all these other games, first of all, people don't like the battle at East and Pembroke traffic. You know you're going to hit a lot of traffic on College Hill. And there's no Emmaus Whitehall anymore. There's a lot of these games we talked about.
They're gone.
So there's a lot of people who still want to get out there on Thanksgiving morning.
That's it.
Maybe the men want to get away while mom and grandma's in the kitchen making the turkey.
That's it.
And they still want to do it. They still want to get out to those games. And it's still going to be the number one gate attraction for either of those teams all year by far, I would think.
The tradition is there. And I'll bet if I went to the Caddy Northampton game on Thanksgiving Day, I'd see guys that I saw there in the 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be like a reunion.
Mm-hmm. What was it like for you to play that time period? Who were some of the people you played with, and what was it like playing in that Thanksgiving Day game?
Well, it was the game. You know, at that time, it was, are we going to beat Bethlehem and have this undefeated season? We were 9-0-1 that year, had a 12-12 tie with Altoona. You know, nobody played that. We played some weird games. But the Thanksgiving Day game was, you know, are you going to win it and, you know, and do this? And like I said, it was a pouring down day. And who knows who's going to win on a day like that. But we did control the game. But you never really thought about it as being a traditional game. When you're playing in it, you're not thinking about it that way. It becomes a traditional game later. You know, when you're going back and you're seeing people that you haven't seen for 20 years and you're seeing them at that game, you know, and stuff like that. It becomes more important later in your life.
Was that game an afternoon game, Allentown and Bethlehem? Was that an afternoon or was that a morning game?
At that time, it was an afternoon game.
So people could theoretically see Easton and Pembroke or Caddy Northampton and head over to wherever, you know, either Allentown or Bethlehem to see that game.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So then you moved on, and before you became a sports writer, you were telling me before the show, you actually spent 2 years in the auto racing industry.
That was in the middle of my career.
You got away from it.
Yeah, I started at the Morning Call in 1959 as a copy boy, running for coffee and doing that kind of thing. I gave up a job at the Acme, making $1.85 an hour to go to work at the Morning Call for $1.01. You know, and I keep telling people about that, you know, $1.01 an hour I started at. And then I got into sports in 1960 until 1978. Then I went out to Indianapolis to USAC, and I became the director of communications there for USAC. And I brought on the USAC cart war. You know, I was there, and it was my fault. You know, they could blame it on me. And so I spent 2 years there. Then I came back in 1980 as the sports editor. Mm-hmm. And I was a sports editor until John Kunda retired in 1998, and then I said, hey guys, how about hiring a new sports editor, a younger guy, you know, and I'd become the columnist, and I became the columnist for the last
You get tired of dealing with guys like me.
Yeah, I got tired of these guys who are saying, why do I have to come into the office? You know? Isn't that right? That's about right.
Yeah, well, I'm going to ask you about some of the writers, too, then. We'll get to that in just a moment. Our special in-studio guest is Paul Reinhardt, a writer for the Morning Call, former editor of the Morning Call, with some other great stories that he'll be sharing with us a little later in the program. Right now, though, it's time for our trivia question, and roll that out there to give you a chance to win tonight's special prize. Tonight's question involves the NFL, and we're asking you to name the winning team and the name of the starting quarterback in the first ever Super Bowl. So name the winning team and the correctly identify the winning team's starting quarterback in the first ever Super Bowl. And again, we'll have a very nice prize for you to give away. Callers do get priority. And you can also email your answers to us at RCN Sportstalk at RCN.com, especially if you're watching us on replay or on our podcast or on video on demand. But callers, if you're watching us live from 7 to 8 on Thursdays, you can call in. You get the first crack at our trivia question. Again, name the winning team and its starting quarterback in the first ever Super Bowl. And here's more information on how and what you can win.
To use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, talking a lot of high school and college football. And coming up, but we're going to talk some NCAA hoops and also some Redskins football. So let's bring in our special guest on the phone lines here for segment two, Alex Parker, sports director for ABC7 and News Channel 8 in the greater Washington, D.C. market. Alex, thanks so much for joining us and welcome to RCN Sports Talk tonight. We're trying to get Alex on the line. Does a great job covering NCAA hoops and also the Washington Redskins. Keith Groller, of course, joining us in studio along with Paul Reinhardt. And Alex, still trying to get him on.
Hello.
Oh, there you are, Alex. There he is. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Apologize for the technical issue. Thanks so much for joining us and welcome to the show here. I want to start a big game in the Washington region this week, Maryland versus Georgetown. Not only was there a lot of excitement before the game, but it was a great atmosphere, I'm told, down there. I believe you were at the game. What was that Maryland-Georgetown game like, decided by 1 point?
I was there. This court side. I was actually sitting two seats down from Big John Thompson down here in D.C. Obviously, there's John Thompson that folks up there know well, Big John, who coached the Hoyas back in the day, and, of course, his son, JT3. So it was kind of wild, and they hadn't played this game, you know, at one of the team's arenas. You know, they played the NCAA tournament. They played in some other preseason tournament-type things, but they hadn't played each other sort of on campus, as it were, until last year for about 20 or 25 years. So last year's game was at College Park. It was sort of epic, and the crowd was nuts, and Maryland won by 4, and everybody thought, man, this is great. I don't know if the second year at Verizon Center will be as good as this one, because Verizon Center is not, it's in Washington, but it is not technically on the campus. It's a pro arena. It doesn't have that feel like an on-campus arena. It was kind of nuts. I mean, it wasn't packed, but by the end of the game, you had probably 60% Georgetown fans, 40% Maryland fans, because College Park is 10 minutes from downtown D.C., maybe 15. And it was crazy. It felt sort of like an epic NCAA tournament game where you had these rival sides going back and forth, and Maryland would score and half the arena would erupt, and then Georgetown would come back and half the arena would erupt. Unfortunately for the Hoyas, they lost last year by 4. They lost this year by 1. They led pretty much the whole game until the last 5 seconds. They blew a 9-point lead with about a minute and a half left, up by 7 with under a minute left. They lose it by 1. They were heartbroken. Maryland was ecstatic, as you might imagine. As I'm talking to you, I'm watching the Georgetown-Arkansas State game. This should be a cupcake for Georgetown, right? Not so much. Arkansas State is up by 20 right now Georgetown. Clearly, I'm just going to take a guess. I'm not a psychiatrist, but the Maryland loss, which was sort of devastating for them, I think is showing its effects now 2 nights later.
Yeah, emotional letdown. I was looking at the schedule. I forgot to look years down the road, but I can't think of a better way for both of those two schools to kind of ignite the fan base for the college basketball season. Is that something that's planned to happen years going forward, and is that something you would like to see as a more regular annual event?
Oh, I would absolutely love to see it, and every fan you talk to would love to see it. And I bet you there's some fans, you know, in your area or nationally that think, you know what, it's a great game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. It took forever to get these two games, the Gavitt games, happening. Both coaches were asked after the game, you know, shouldn't you make this an annual event? And Mark Turgeon, who was the happier of the two, obviously, Turk's coach, said, yeah, John and I'll talk about it and we'll see and whatever. He was sort of upbeat. Of course, his team had just come off this incredible win. JT3 looks like he wanted to talk about anything other than continuing this thing. I mean, obviously, the emotions will sort of simmer down. If I'm Georgetown, I'd want to keep playing this because you've lost these two. And if you don't play them again, then what sticks in people's minds is, well, Georgetown just couldn't beat Maryland, could they? If I'm Georgetown, I want to play that game, like, next Friday, if they would let us. Let Georgetown, if I'm them. But right now, there are no plans to continue this. It'll be all the talk moving forward. But until the two programs sort of figure out a way to do it, if they want to do it, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Alex, I was just curious what your opinion is of the Big East. It certainly has gone through a tremendous transition. The Syracuses and Pitt, they're out of there. But we still have Villanova. We still have Georgetown. We still have St. John's. We still have some great traditional programs. What do you think about the Big East in general and certainly what Villanova's win does for that league and what it does for maybe the Georgetown-Villanova rivalry?
The Villanova win obviously was huge for the league in many ways. And it sort of put the new Big East, you know, the Big East with an asterisk, like on the map. Again, the Big East shouldn't have to be on the map because when I was a kid, it wasn't just the best basketball conference. It was by far the best basketball conference. I remember, whatever, I guess it was 85, when 3 of 4 teams in the Final Four were from the Big East. It obviously took a huge hit. And for us locally in D.C., when Syracuse got out, even though Villanova is clearly a rival of Georgetown, still with St. John's, et cetera, for Georgetown, Syracuse was the number one rival. So anyway, the new one doesn't feel like the old one. It's wonderful for the conference that Villanova won. Yes, Villanova, Georgetown, when Nova comes to Verizon, if they do this year, and if Georgetown, when they go up to their place, that's a really big game. But you do miss, you know what? Even when the Big East wasn't split up like it was, even if we just go back 10 years and it was still that Big East, it still didn't feel like the Big East of Raleigh Massimino, Louis Conaseca, Kim Calhoun, Dean John Thompson. I mean, those were some serious legends there. So not only did it sort of take a hit when these folks obviously retired from coaching, and then other leagues and other mid-majors sort of got better and bigger themselves, but then if you lose Villanova, and you lose Pitt, and you lose Syracuse, and I'm sorry, you lose Syracuse, you lose Pitt, and it's not as good. They won't say that. The Big East won't say that. They'll say the Creightons of the world and these sort of former mid-majors are just as competitive as some of the blue bloods, and they're right, because we see it every March. That said, it doesn't feel the same. Certainly in Washington, D.C., Georgetown's schedule, I said this to somebody the other day, if you're Georgetown and you could only win one game on your schedule this year, it would have to be the Maryland game. Sure, Villanova would be a great win. Sure, Syracuse, who they will play out of conference, luckily, that would be nice. But they don't have, you don't look at the Georgetown schedule and go, wow, there's Syracuse at their place. There's Syracuse here. There's Pitt. You don't have that anymore. So clearly it's, for us in D.C., the Big East doesn't feel the same. Maybe up where you guys are because of Nova and St. John's and things like that, maybe it is just as good.
Well, it isn't the same, but there's still obviously a lot of excitement after what happened last year with the Wildcats. Where are they going? They're going to Hawaii? Because I was down there for a football game at Georgetown about a month or so ago, and they had a big halftime deal there with Coach Thompson and the whole team, and they announced that they're going to Hawaii. Is that over Thanksgiving? And then the second question is, do you get to go along?
They are going to Hawaii. They're going to Maui, and I think they leave in a couple days. I was talking to some of the sort of Georgetown brass before the game. Of course, before the Maryland game, they were all sort of chipper and excited, and we've got Maryland, and we've got Arkansas State coming in, and then we're going to Maui. They're going to play Oregon in Maui. Georgetown does this all the time. Like, right now, I hate to give you the play-by-play. They're down by 21 points.
Wow.
They're at home against Arkansas State. So, it doesn't look real good. That said, they are going to Maui. I will not be going. We cover the Redskins sort of like that. Unfortunately, the budget does not allow us to cover either Maryland or Georgetown or GW. Or anybody else when they go to Maui, but we'll be watching.
Speaking of the Big East, obviously Villanova is the team to beat this year, but I hear Xavier, Marquette, and Butler is getting a lot of attention as well. Where do you see a Georgetown fitting in, and do you think anyone can rival or challenge the Wildcats?
If you'd asked me 2 nights ago at 5:45 before they played, and frankly, if you'd asked me 2 nights ago when they were up by, you know, 9 over Maryland with 2 minutes left, I would have said, you know, this looks like a pretty good season. But now that I have the benefit of hindsight, they blow the lead to Maryland. They're down by 20 to Arkansas State. It would be hard for anybody, including me. And back in the day, I kind of grew up a Hoyas fan. I grew up in Delaware, and we only got 3 or 4 channels on the cable in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. One of them was the Fox 5 station out of Washington. So pre-Ewing, I was watching Georgetown games. That said, it can't look real good for Georgetown, because if they can't beat Arkansas State, what's going to happen when they're playing Nova, Creighton, St. John's, you name it. So, but this can be deceiving. It's early. It would be nothing. It would be just like Georgetown to go and somehow beat Oregon, a top 10 team, you know, after having lost, if they hold on to lose.
Yeah.
They're down 21, by the way, to Arkansas State. I don't know enough about the other teams in the Big East to know who can challenge Nova. That cheesy cliche, until you beat the best, they're going to stay the best.
Yeah.
So they've got to be the best team. A lot of their kids, by the way, are from what we call the DMV down here. Mm-hmm. The Maryland area, D.C. area. So they're the best until somebody proves otherwise. And but what a heck of a win for Jay Wright and those guys. And the way they did it, obviously, is storybook. But good for them. Good for sort of an old-school Big East power. And it was good to see.
How does the Georgetown roster look? I know they got Isaiah Copeland coming back. L.J. Peak is back. But after that, there's a lot of newer players. Anyone to really keep an eye on and watch develop over the course of this year?
The Copeland fellow had a nice game the other night. He seems to be their sort of most all-around player, can kind of do it all. Other than that, they got a lot of new faces. It's clear that it's going to take them some time to gel, if that can ever happen in sports. I will say this about them, and I'm trying not to keep making note of the fact that they're down by 19 at home to Arkansas State. The other night, as I'm watching them, if you've watched Georgetown over the years with this Princeton offense, it was kind of like the basketball equivalent of like 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know what I mean? And the final scores are 56-51, and it just wasn't very – they may have won a lot of games or a reasonable amount of games, but it wasn't dynamic. It wasn't exciting. They pressed Maryland. I mean, they played – they got up and down. They drove the ball. They made threes. They shot threes and made threes. They were sort of more dynamic, exciting, offensive. Somehow JT3 must have figured out over these years, he's won a lot of games. He's lost a lot of NCAA tournament teams to double-digit seeds, and it must have dawned on him, I've got some horses down here. I'm gonna have to run. We're gonna run a little bit and be a little more physical and a little more imposing physically. When Nova sees Georgetown, they'll see a different Georgetown team than they've seen in a long, long time, because these Hoyas, albeit not doing it in a winning fashion, they play more like Dad's Hoyas used to play. They're up and down. They're more in your face. If they can sort of get these kinks out, they can be a pretty darn good team. Right now, I would not bet on them making the NCAA tournament, because it looks like they're going to be 0-2. But again, it's early.
Yeah. There was a curious situation at George Washington University. Mike Lonergan, we had him on the show a couple times, always was very cordial with us, very, very nice to work with. I enjoyed my conversations with him. You started hearing allegations as the summer went on of things going on down there, and then he was dismissed rather late in the offseason. Your thoughts on Mike Lonergan's dismissal and, you know, everything that went on there in a rather weird spring and summer at GW?
It was very weird. I've known Mike Lonergan since about 2000. He was the coach at Catholic University in D.C. He led them to the D3 national title, and sort of made a name for himself that. He's a D.C. guy from Bowie, Maryland. I've known him going on 20 years. Not that well, but covered him at Catholic. He was an assistant in Maryland. He was at Vermont and had some success there. Then he comes back to GW, sort of local boy done good. Just he's the guy next door. He's as far as I would ever know, and frankly still may consider him, a great guy. And then the Washington Post article comes out about maybe 3 or 4 months ago. And it details these allegations. And it details that the school, these allegations weren't new. They'd been going on for a year or two, and that the school was, you know, obviously aware of this. And frankly, had sort of assigned somebody to the basketball program to kind of full-time monitor the situation, for lack of a better term. And you thought, I thought to myself, because we've been around sports, especially the recent sports climate where folks don't survive those things. You know, players don't stay on teams, and coaches don't stay coaching when there are, even if it's just allegations, mm-hmm. even if it's not proven, we've seen this happen where folks lose their jobs. And then nothing happened for a month or so. The team went to Japan with Mike as the coach. And I thought to myself, you know what? Maybe somehow he's going to get through this, because I told people, I can't imagine him making it through this, even though we don't even know what this is. We just know what the Post is reporting. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, like you said, I mean, what, 2 or 3 weeks before the season starts, they announced that they've fired him, and they brought up Maurice Joseph, his former assistant, to be the interim coach. And it was just bizarre, because everybody I've talked to and every time I've been around Michael Onagan, he was sort of mild-mannered, and he would have been one of the, you hate to sound naive this day and age, he would have been one of the last people you would have said, you would have guessed, oh man, he must be real hard on these guys. Mm-hmm. He just seemed like a regular kind of guy. We don't know what the truth is. We do know that GW thought there was enough there to fire him. I spoke with Maurice Joseph, the interim coach, at Media Day a couple weeks ago, and they were so reluctant to talk about this at Media Day. Everybody, you could sort of sense that GW was on eggshells, and it's like, this is the pink elephant in the room. Nobody's talking about the guy who was coaching here like 2 weeks ago, the local boy done good. I said, Maurice, this must be tough for you, and he was sort of reluctant to say anything. And I said, listen, who would have ever thought you'd get your first job this way? Mike must mean a lot to you because you were part of his crew. And he sort of let me in a teeny bit and said, listen, I have all the respect for Mike Lonergan. He means a lot to me. He means a lot to us. He means a lot to this place. But we're looking forward, and then the sort of cliches came, which is fine. They're mm-hmm. looking ahead and not looking back. But, yeah, I think a lot of D.C. basketball fans are still, if not shocked, at least surprised at Mike Lonergan, that this happened to that guy.
Yeah. Our special guest on the phone lines, Alex Parker, sports director at ABC 7 and News Channel 8, in addition to a lot of other things he does down in the Washington, D.C. area. Before we let you go, I just wanted to pick your brain about the Redskins. They have the Packers this weekend. Green Bay doesn't seem to be Green Bay of old, and especially if Kirk Cousins, I think, can pass the ball and get the passing game going, I think they have a real good shot. But what are your thoughts on the Redskins versus the Packers this weekend?
It feels like, to me, it's hard to call the Packers a trap game because they're the Green Bay Packers, not Aaron Rodgers, who presumably is going to the Hall of Fame. But the Redskins feel great about themselves. They're 5-3-1 and were a shanked chip shot field goal in London away from being 6-3 instead of 5-3-1. Yeah. They tied the Bengals. One of these nights, maybe in prime time, Aaron Rodgers is going to, at least one more time, look like Aaron Rodgers again. And sometimes when you count those folks out, remember last year he did the relax or something to people that thought they were kind of done and then they went on a winning streak. One of these games, he's going to be himself. Mm-hmm. But the Redskins are at home. They've played horrifically in prime time over the years. I mean, I don't remember the last time. Remember the Eagles game when the Eagles came to town about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, big Monday night game. Donovan McNabb had just signed his new contract with the Redskins before the game. And the first play of the game, it's a play fake, and it's Michael Vick to Deshaun Jackson, and it was, that game was over about 10 seconds in. Yeah. That's how the Redskins have played on primetime for the last 5 years. Yeah. So until they win under the lights when everybody's watching, they haven't done it yet. They're favored by about 2.5. That's not giving the Redskins a ton of respect, given that they're at home. It should be at least 3 if they're at home, or 4 or 5. They got a great shot. I'm skeptical if I'm a Redskins fan because this is what they do. Yeah. They don't do well in prime time, and you can't keep Aaron Rodgers looking like he's looked, and they've looked every week, can you? So I would lean towards Packers, but again, who knows? You know, this is pro sports. This is sports, period. So none of us really know.
Yeah. Real quick before we let you go, top draft pick Josh Dodson. I believe he was seen wearing a boot earlier this week. Any news on him? Is there a timetable to bring him back, or are they going to get a chance to see him at all, you know, before the regular season ends?
I don't think there's any chance he's going to be back that you're going to see him this regular season. This has been another of these bizarre things. And we've gotten so used to drama with the Redskins with RG3, and then there was, you know, I mean, there was Albert Haynesworth back in the day, and then we had a guy that was doing bingo games calling the plays for Jim Zorn. Well, I could list 20 crazy things that have happened with the Redskins, and you get so jaded by the level of drama that even something like this doesn't feel as big as we should make it. This is a huge deal. He's a top draft pick. Okay, he doesn't play. He has an Achilles injury that they didn't realize he had or thought that it would be like this. And every time we'd see him at camp, or the second week or third week, whatever, oh, he's looking better. He might be active. He might play. And then he doesn't play. And, you know, the Redskins won't concede this publicly. They've got to be concerned. I mean, if you went out and got a brand-new car and it didn't work, you know, well, it'll work one of these years. You know, I mean, this is a top draft pick. Now, that said, he's a young fellow, and they may be just exercising extreme caution because they've got Pierre Garçon, Deshaun Jackson, Jordan Reed. They got Vernon Davis. They got playmakers coming out of the closet. So they're not missing him that much. But clearly, you don't draft somebody that high and then not expect him to ultimately produce. But before he can produce, he's got to play.
Play, yeah. All right, Alex, thanks so much for joining us, and pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you so much.
All right, Alex Parker, outstanding sports director, ABC 7 and News Channel 8, kind enough to join us and talk about college hoops and the Redskins with us. All right, let's go back to the phone lines here. We have a special trivia question out there dealing with the NFL. Let's go first to Easton and talk with Joe. Joe, welcome to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call.
Thank you. How are you?
Good, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
All right, we're looking for the name of an NFL team and its starting quarterback of the first Super Bowl.
It would be the Green Bay Packers and Bart Starr.
And Bart Starr. You got it right off the bat.
35-10 Packers.
Well, you got extra credit for that. Keith, are you going to throw in some extra?
That was the easiest question we've ever asked. I mean,
don't start complaining about my trivia questions.
Easy.
No?
Easy. How about Super Bowl 10?
I thought it was great.
As a
Packers shareholder, I thought it was a great question.
See? Well, Joe, thank you. You're a very astute and intelligent person. I appreciate
that
comment.
Thanks, Chris. Right back at you.
All right. Thank you very much. Joe, we'll be in contact with you after the show about the prize. All right. And I think everyone else in the line is for the trivia. No, we go back to phone line? Yes. We're going to go back to Don from Penn Argyle. Don, welcome to Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, Don. How are you?
Good, but the guy before me got the answer right, and that was my answer.
Oh, okay.
So I guess I get nothing.
You got some airtime.
Yeah, you got anything you want to say to Keith Grohl or Paul Reinhart?
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
And John is okay. We're good for that. All right. Right now it's time for Keith's segment where he gets to sound off and talk about anything and everything on his mind. I hope you're going to be a little more positive because last week people were like, what did you do to Keith? He was ripping everybody. He was like nuclear bombing the entire sports landscape last week.
It's grumblings. So, it's not happy talk.
I usually try to work in something positive. So take it away, Keith.
All right. I got a little mixed bag. I got to have some negativity here. Mike Trout named American League MVP. What a joke. I mean, the most valuable player should be on a winning team at a minimum. I mean, if you want to call it the most outstanding, he's not the most valuable player. His team won 74 games, 14 games under 500. That's a joke. LeBron James, you know, taking nights off. It's only early, mid-November. We're early in this. What are we doing? Popovich started this stuff with the Spurs. It's a joke. If you pay good money, and I'm there. Oh, there's my camera. Okay. The lovely lady behind the camera there. You could get my attention anytime. But Popovich started this crap, sitting guys down. What if you pay good money and NBA tickets are not cheap and you go to see the Cavs and LeBron's not playing? What a joke and what a travesty. I'm going to give you some positives, however. I want to give you Brandon Igodowski, a friend of yours, CEO at Pocono Raceway. He's come up with a rain-free guarantee. Last year, of course, Pocono had the unfortunate distinction of being the only track in the history of auto racing, I think, to have three postponements, the two NASCAR events, the one IndyCar event, all postponed on Sunday, moved to Monday. And, of course, those people either had to arrange to see the race on Monday or they lost some money. He's going, if you buy a ticket, it's rained out on Sunday and you can't make it on Monday, next year you get your money back. And I want to say congratulations to Talik Williams Allen High School going to Central Connecticut State University. Good news for the Canaries. A lot of excitement with that team this year. And good luck to all of our teams competing for state championships on Saturday. Emmaus Field Hockey, Moravian Academy Field Hockey, Central Catholic Girls Volleyball, Parkland Girls Volleyball, and Northwestern Girls, right? Yeah. Northwestern Girls also. Shows the ladies carry the way for District 11. Good luck to all of them. I hope we go 5-for-5 with state championships.
Mike Trout is the most exciting dynamic player in baseball. How
could you be the most valuable?
The Angels, who else was on the team? He carried them to 74 wins. So what if they won 74? He was their best player.
Well, boy, it seems like, 74 wins. They're doing a great job. They should spend more money on guys like Albert Pujols.
I want him to come to Philadelphia, too, in a couple of years when he's a free agent. All right, that squirrel is grumbling. Feel free to comment on that. And ahead of our next break, the D.C. high school football playoff action is in full swing ahead of the traditional Turkey Day games in the DMV region. Tonight, we present a special look at the playoff edition of our DKN Sports Minute.
This is a DKN Sports Playoff Special. The DCIAA football playoffs kicked off in the Stripes division, where the number one seed Bell Griffins faced the number four seed Cardozo Clerks. Running back Tiante McKenzie takes the handoff and charges into the end zone from 22 yards out. Bell goes up 14-0. Just a few plays later, number 22 QB Ronel St. John connects on a 20-yard pass to number 6 Kendall Brooks, who outruns the Cardozo defenders into the end zone. The Bell Griffins win big, 36-0. Still in the Stripes division, the number 2 seeded Roosevelt Rough Riders faced off against the McKinley Tech Trainers. Roosevelt set the tone early when defensive back number 2 Dylan Clary steps in front of the McKinley receiver, picks his pocket, and takes it 60 yards to the house. Roosevelt cruises to a 44-0 victory. In the Stars division, the defending champions H.D. Woodson Warriors squared off with the Eastern Ramblers in a rematch of last year's championship game. The Warriors made their presence known when number 17 QB Tyron Robinson hits number 9 Edward Hendricks in stride for a score. Midway through the second quarter, Robinson and Hendricks connect again for a Warriors touchdown. The defending champs secure a seat at the Turkey Bowl with a 44-0 rout. In our final matchup, the number 2 seed Wilson Tigers met their rivals, the number 3 seeded Ballou Knights. Wilson got off to their ways quickly. Quarterback number 5 Stephen Williams drops off a short screen to number 2 Sean Savoy, who does what he's done all year long, outrun everyone. Wilson goes up 7-0. Ballou came back when quarterback Kenneth Harrison hits number 9 Levante Gator in the end zone. Score tied 6-6. But the Tigers move the ball down to the Knights' red zone. Stephen Williams drops an out pass to number 3 Iman Fleming, who goes in for the score. The Wilson Tigers win 20-12, securing their spot in the Stars championship game. This has been a DKN Sports Playoff Special.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call, along with Keith Groller and special guest Paul Reinhart. So glad Paul could be with us. And I want to ask you one big question about journalism and the broadcasting industry and how sports are covered, because it has changed so much, even in the last few years. And, you know, ESPN and Fox Sports, they're getting more away from the highlights and the actual game footage. And you put on ESPN, they have clips of Comedy Central, and they're talking politics. What are your thoughts on how covering sports has evolved and, in my mind, degenerated over the last few years, at least in some places?
Well, I guess it depends what level you're on. And, if it becomes more entertainment than anything else, I think, people are making way too much money. College football coaches are making $6 and $9 million a year. That's insane, for that kind of thing. The whole thing has just become so big in that way. I still like it at this level. I like that Patriot League level. Lafayette is doing badly this year, but I like covering it because the kids are good kids. You don't get a lot of this, going out and assaulting their, girlfriend and doing that kind of stuff. There's just too much that's going on now. There's too much away from the field that's getting involved in the coverage of the sports, and it's ruining it for my wife, who is not a sports fan, can really get on me about it. Something, Colin Kaepernick or whoever, she can just get on my case about that kind of stuff because, some weird things are happening.
Just to chime in really quickly, because I was at your alma mater, Moravian College, the other night talking to our journalism class. And one of the big differences, in the old days, we were the main source. Mm-hmm. We were the main source of who won, who lost, what was the score. Now, through social media, through cable television, a lot of people have already seen the game. So we have a more of an analytical style mm-hmm. now than it's not just who won and how they won. Now we try to get into more. I think there's more stuff in there about you know strengths and weaknesses and that kind of. And there's more analytical work done, whether it's high school, college, and certainly in the pros. There's no question about it. Nobody cares anymore that the Sixers won. They want to know did Embiid play? Is he going to play the next night? That kind of stuff. It's more analytical stuff.
Early in my career, we didn't even talk to coaches after games. You know, you went back to the office. And you wrote the game story because people didn't know anything about the game. Yeah. So you wrote a game story. You know, now you can go and you can write a story without putting the final score in it now, and they'll know it. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, things have just changed so much. You know, from those days. Of course, when you're talking my days, you're talking back into the early 60s.
But even since the early 80s, it really has changed
quite a bit. Yeah, it definitely has. There's no question about it.
And I do. Cover your ears, Keith. I do think people at the Morning Call do a great job of doing both. I mean, they tell people about the game, they give you the facts, and they give you something behind the scenes. And, you know, as someone who has built up the Morning Call, I guess that's something you're proud of.
Well, the Morning Call always had it nice when the Morning Call was and the Evening Chronicle both existed. And that was only up until 1980, that you had the Morning Call would go and cover the game in the morning, and the Evening Chronicle would write the little with the quotes and things like that. You know, the follow-up story, a color story in for the afternoon paper. And so people loved that. They got they got both sides of the deal. You know, now it's amazing because in the 1980s, we would have never been covering field hockey playoff games. Volleyball playoff games, you know, we would have never been doing that. Cross-country meets, we would have never been doing that. But now, these things are, you know, we're getting out and doing them. We're getting out covering those minor sports, you know, giving them coverage that back in, you know, 30 years ago, that would have been unheard of to do that.
All right, we'll take one more quick break and then be back with Paul Reinhardt for our final segment. Quick reminder about RCN's broadcast games this weekend. Freedom Parkland will be the live game on Friday night, and then on Saturday at 12:30, live coverage of Lehigh Lafayette. And then on Saturday, 5 o'clock on tape delay, we'll have the 3A championship, Penn Argyle versus Notre Dame. Final segment is straight ahead. Welcome back, everyone. Final segment of tonight's show, and let's go right to our roundtable topics tonight. Paul, topic number one, should sports writers only be deciding Major League Baseball postseason awards? For people who might have missed it, Justin Verlander, who is at worst one of the top three pitchers in the American League this year, did not win the Cy Young, even though he had more first-place votes because two writers in Tampa had an issue with him or something about Justin, kept him off the ballot completely, and the reduction of points took the Cy Young Award away from him. So in this age of, you know, all this other media, Paul, do you think sports writers alone should determine who wins these awards?
I think you're going to get that. If you're going to let just the sports writers do it, you're going to get opinions that are going to differ because they're going to stick up for their own region and their own town, city, and all that kind of stuff. I do not think sports writers alone should be the decisive factor.
Because Kate Upton's all upset about that. So, Keith, are you going to stand behind Kate Upton?
We can get Kate Upton on camera talking about it at length. I'm all for that. We include her in the process. I had Verlander on my fantasy team. He had a decent season, not a great season. You know, I don't know what the big fuss is about him.
You're not going to support Kate Upton?
Oh, always. Always. I will support, but I can't go with Verlander there. And you know, he had a good year, but not great.
Yep. All right, topic two. Who would you put on your Lehigh Valley Mount Rushmore in terms of the sports personnel?
I'm going to guess we're going to be 4-for-4 in this one, but I hope I'm right. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, we're going to go any sport you want on that Mount Rushmore. I got to put Mario Andretti on that Mount Rushmore. Mm-hmm. I got to put Chuck Bednarik on that Mount Rushmore. I'm going to put Larry Holmes on that Mount Rushmore, and I'm going to put Larry Miller on that Rushmore.
I told you, I have it written down, my four, exactly
I thought you'd put Andre Reed on there.
No.
No?
No. Okay. No, I mean, he's in the top 10, certainly. No. But no, I mean, but you talk about just changing the culture of their particular sports. I think all four of them certainly did that.
Four great names. All right, topic number three, what's your prediction for the Lehigh-Lafayette game? Or Lafayette-Lehigh, Lafayette-Lehigh this weekend. Paul?
Yeah, Lafayette-Lehigh. It's at Lafayette. Well, I mean, Lehigh is a four-touchdown favorite, and I write on Saturday morning that it could be worse than that. You know, it could be worse than that. But I also say that Lafayette has a chance. I do not think that Lafayette is going to win the football game. I think that Lafayette is going to give them a better game than they think they're going to get. If they stumble around like they did for a half against Bucknell, if Lehigh stumbles around the way they did it against Bucknell, Lafayette's chances go way up. Because if you let a team that's been down so long suddenly have a little bit of swagger, who knows what's going to happen? That game at Yankee Stadium was unbelievable.
Well, that's what I was going to
say. Saturday's paper, you're going to say how they're going to win, though, right?
People I am going to say how they're going
to
do it.
Okay, Lehigh's halves has to come ready to play. I think they're expecting a tough game, by the way. I don't think they're overlooking Lafayette. If they need motivation, just put that game film on from either 2013 or 2014. When Lafayette came in 2013 and got the championship on their field, and then they kicked their butt down at Yankee Stadium. If they want motivation, just replay those game films. They'll be motivated for Saturday.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Paul, along with Keith and everyone at RCN. I'm Chris. Have a great Thanksgiving Day weekend. We'll see you in 2 weeks.